we go. Three balls, two strikes. Two outs. Got him swinging! Strike three! Ball game over! Royals win! That's a sweep and a three-game winning streak for the first time this season.
I told them, I said, nobody could keep us from winning three straight till August. So we had to have a little fun with it. You know, it's nice. You know, these guys, you see it every day. They work. They come out and play hard. To be rewarded with some wins is something that's really nice to see. And for them to feel, especially going into an off day, you know, nothing tomorrow. And these guys, they deserve it.
Yeah, Royals fans deserve it too, not just the players. But anywho, the Royals get a sweep over the first place Twins, although the Twins are only one game over 500. Welcome to Sports Ticket. Royals went 2-1 yesterday. Freddie Fermin with a home run in the second inning. Royals, then it was tied 1-1, and they get the lead in the third, and then the bullpen does the rest. Ron Yarbrough got the win, giving up one run on seven hits, five strikeouts. Royals 32-75 after a three-game winning streak. First three-game winning streak of the season. Only took to the end of July for that to happen. And then they get today off because they need to celebrate their three-game winning streak. And then they'll start a three-game series with the Mets tomorrow night at 7:10. Mets will not have Max Scherzer. He's been traded to the Texas Rangers. And there's even possibility Justin Verlander may be traded. So the Mets, after spending tons upon tons of money, has not turned out the way they were hoping. The Royals made a trade yesterday, and we'll talk about that in a moment. But first, local sports with Dusty.
Yes, we had some area athletes that finished off competing at the USA Track and Field National Junior Olympics there over the weekend in Eugene, Oregon. And Madison Howland of Smith Center was the one that really had the best weekend from the area. She finished with a fifth place run there in the 13, 14-year-old girls 3,000 meter at 10:27.11. So Madison Howland also part of the 13 to 14-year-old girls 4x800 meter relay team that finished and won the national championship on Wednesday. So she, again, had a great week, as well as, you know, Miley Ose. There were a lot of area athletes, the Richard sisters from Beloit, that were competing. You can find full results at ntksports.com for those events and for all the area athletes that competed as well at the USA Track and Field National Junior Olympics. Also, since we didn't have the sports ticket earlier, or at the end of last week, I should say, we want to tell you about the Beloit Grasshoppers, who had an outstanding finish to their season, and they were named the NCCastSports.com Cunningham Telephone and Cable Athletes of the Week after winning the state championship on the Friday before last at Concordia. They finished with a win in the championship game and rolled through with a 4-0 record there, beating Hanover, or actually on Friday night, they beat the Concordia Knights 8-3 in that championship game, finished the year at 13-4. They're just the second Beloit team to ever win a state championship in Pee Wee baseball, joining the Mud Hens in 2012. The Beloit Grasshoppers, again, were our athletes of the week from NCKSports.com, and you can always go back and read that at the website and find more information about our past athletes of the week as well from Cunningham Telephone and Cable.
All right. After the Royals game yesterday, utility player Nicky Lopez, who was playing first base yesterday because the Royals apparently wanted to let everybody know he could play every position on the field, was traded by the Royals to the Braves for a relief pitcher. Okay, so listen, this is how it works. We know what the Royals traded for, right? You trade somebody, you get a young prospect, guy has some potential, young, chance to work with them, maybe just a tweak in the mechanics, and no, you get a 29 guy just as old as Nicky Lopez, Taylor Hearn, who's 29. They trade away a guy that's versatile in Nicky Lopez, although he only hit .213 this year. He played 53 games, or started 53 games, five different positions. Five seasons with the Royals at .248 with 119 RBIs. Hearn played most of the season with the Rangers, but his contract was purchased by the Braves last Monday. He made one appearance in Atlanta. They DFA'd him. So, anywho, or they were going to, the Rangers did, and then the Braves picked him up, and then they were like, Braves, we're good, we'll trade him, because the Royals are dumb enough to give up Nicky Lopez for him. So, he's given up 12 runs and 7 and a third and 5 appearances this season. He's been optioned to AAA Omaha. Taylor Hearn is 29, 6'6", 230. Apparently, the Royals, you know, J.J. Piccolo said last week, I saw this, and I'm about barfed, said that the Royals are not looking for the prospects or the 3 or 4 year player. They're looking for major league ready guys. When you trade guys that aren't even everyday starters like Nicky Lopez, do you really think you're going to get a major league ready player that's better than Nicky Lopez? No. Is J.J. Piccolo and the Royals that naive? I mean, this is what it feels like to me. It feels like the Royals have screwed up so royally since they won the World Series in 2015, which is 8 years now. They've been horrible the last few. They're on pace to have their worst record in franchise history. They're set to blow that away despite a three-game inning streak. It's almost like, you know, we had this plan to draft a whole bunch of college pitchers, and we're going to bring them up all at the same time, which was going to what? Speed up the process, because the high school pitchers, they couldn't develop.
Mm-hmm.
So they were like, okay, we're not going to draft high school pitchers. We're going to go ahead and draft the college pitchers. Well, Singer's okay. Lynch has not been consistent. Bubich has a blown out elbow. Kohar has been just been a mess. And whether that's the player's fault or the organization's fault, I don't know. But the bottom line is that that has not worked. And now it's almost like, instead of doing it the way they probably should, and that is, you know, you develop your young players the best you can, and some have to develop at the big league level, as we're seeing right now, baptism by fire, which is okay, then seeing a whole bunch of 35-year-old retreads out there, so I'm cool with that. But when you trade somebody, you're going to have to get some kind of younger guys, prospects, guys that have the chance to be. You might get a guy that ends up being a steal in a trade 5 years from now because he's developed. And I think what this is really telling me is when J.J. Piccolo says we're looking for major league ready players, I think this is how I take it. We're not good enough to develop anybody in our organization when it comes to pitchers, so we need major league ready pitchers now because we apparently can't teach pitchers how to pitch the right way. and also, the other thing it tells me is we are trying to shortcut the process because we've tried the college pitcher route, we can't develop them. We've tried the high school pitcher route, we can't develop them. So now, instead of doing what we probably should do, and that is we probably should like fire everybody in the organization that's had anything to do with development the last 6 or 7 years, which, by the way, they haven't. The Dayton Moore's gone, they cleaned house. No, they didn't. They have some of the same people, and they're scouting and developmental camps, and they don't. I mean, they could clean house. That's what they need to do, because they're not getting results. I mean, we've talked about it before. What great player they developed right now? Like who is it? Bobby Witt Jr. is coming on. This is why I said it was insane to think about trading him early in the year, and people were giving up on him. I couldn't understand that. Like, do you think you're ever going to win if you trade away the one good young player you have?
Mm-hmm.
You're never going to win. So J.J. Piccolo is all about, well, we want major league ready players. Listen, the only teams that say we want major league ready players are contenders. The Royals are 32 and 75. What the hell is J.J. Piccolo and the Royals doing? I don't understand it. So getting back to this trade, you trade Nicky Lopez for a guy that in his career has an ERA of 5.25. This year ERA is 100 and, let's see, he had one appearance, 4 games with the Rangers, ERA over 10. Total. His total ERA this year is 14.73 in 5 games. 7 innings, he's allowed 12 runs, walked 6. 7 strikeouts in 7 innings. So at least he's got some power stuff. So listen, I would be okay with this move if I knew the Royals could fix people. Because maybe, you know, 1 strikeout per inning, that's not bad. You know, that means he's got some power stuff. 6'6", 230. I mean, you know, maybe that's somebody could be a dominant. He's a left-hander. But I have no faith in the Royals going to develop. If the Texas Rangers and the Atlanta Braves weren't able to do anything, why are the Royals going to figure it out when they haven't developed a pitcher other than maybe Danny Duffy, maybe, in the last 15 years. This is ridiculous. I mean, and you give up a guy. Listen, Nicky Lopez is, I want to make this clear. Nicky Lopez is not a star. He's not an everyday player even. But if you're going to trade him, go ahead and get a double-A guy that's got, like, there's one pitch that's, could you just got the potential. I don't understand the plan. That's it.
Well, I definitely don't understand the plan. I don't have a problem with the trade, but I don't understand the full plan going forward. Right? I don't think the Royals were even going to get a guy like what anybody would even really want. From
right.
Nicky Lopez.
I agree with that, but I would rather have a 21-year-old guy that has all kinds of issues than a 29-year-old guy who, what we think he's going to be, Cy Young when he's 35?
Yeah, and I don't disagree with that, and I think this guy's the only thing he's ever going to do with the Royals is be a reliever.
Oh, yeah,
he's
absolutely
not going to. So
they
do that,
have enough.
They
relievers.
At least do have a better track record with some relievers, right? But it's not a great track record. But I didn't expect anything for Nicky Lopez. I don't care that they traded Nicky Lopez because he's not clearly an everyday part of the future of this team. If you can't figure out where you're starting him this year with one of the worst, well, what's going to be the worst team you've ever fielded record-wise, if you can't figure out one spot for him to be playing every day, he's not part of your future as an everyday guy.
He's not good enough.
Yeah, and so like you said, he was at first base yesterday, which means he started at five different positions this year. In whatever 52 starts in 63 games, like he's not starting every game either.
He played in left field suddenly recently.
Yeah, and so it's like there were people just unbelievably overreacting about the Nicky Lopez part of it yesterday on social media, and I'm like, why do you need this guy? Like, this guy's not even.
Not part of the future.
No, not every day.
But like, neither is Taylor Hearn.
No, and it's like, are you worried about like losing a utility guy 4 years from now that might have re-signed with the Royals or something? Like, I have no problem with trading Nicky Lopez at all.
No, me neither.
And but you do. I mean, you would like to have somebody other than what you got, somebody younger for sure, but I just don't think that's out there for Nicky Lopez. I don't think even...
Oh, it's out there. It's just a matter... There's younger guys out there.
Well, if you can make the trade with somebody...
Well, sure. Listen, you can find all kinds of young guys that are in single A, double A. You get... The question is, you aren't going to get a star prospect, obviously, but you could at least get a guy that's young, that, you know, there's one little thing you like about him. You're like, you know what? He's going to help us, and we think he can help us in a couple of years. But instead, J.J. Piccolo wants somebody to help him now. What the hell? What's the point when you're 32 and 75? You need to build for the future because the future is not now.
Yeah. I don't know the plan at all.
But I agree with you. You're not going to get a big-time prospect for him. But do you think 29-year-old Taylor Hearn is really going to be anything of the – I mean, maybe he will. Maybe we'll be proven wrong, but – I just don't. Whatever. I have no problem with trading him. I agree with you, but I don't understand what. I just don't understand. Anyway, so you know, the Royals finally win three in a row, and then they make a trade like this. Whatever. Let's talk football, please, because the Chiefs are getting ready to defend their Super Bowl championship. They hit the field for a third straight padded practice yesterday, longest practice camp thus far, 2 hours, 25 minutes. Mahomes treated the fans with a show. I mean, multiple throws from every arm angle imaginable. Justin Ross continues to impress. You know, this is a guy that was a stud at Clemson and then had a neck injury, and I thought if this guy could somehow become healthy, it'd be a steal for the Chiefs. So far, he's looked great in camp, but please, 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 Chiefs fans, I know this every single year. It happens in baseball and spring training. It happens in training camp with the Chiefs every single year. And it seems like it is a wide receiver. Every single year, there is somebody that just catches fire, and people are like, wow, that guy is, whoa. You know, it was Darius Fountain a couple of years ago. He's not even on the team. And now Justin Ross, he has the ability. It's whether he can stay healthy with that neck injury. But there's other people, other guys they're talking about, it looks like a standout in camp. I'm like, I remember certain running backs look like standouts in camp, and then they didn't do anything. They weren't even on the team or on the practice squad. So, and by the way, we haven't even played a preseason game yet. So let's at least get that far. But Justin Ross looked pretty good yesterday. They liked the rookie tailback, Denarik Prince. He had a touchdown reception yesterday. He's been one of the early standouts of training camp. The bad news, Nazee Johnson, who was having a really good camp, defensive back for the Chiefs, who was really pushing for maybe even a starting spot, they said, tore his ACL on Saturday. So he is done for the year. Andy Reid mentioned Kadarius Toney, who injured his knee last Sunday, is making progress after his knee surgery. Chiefs will take the field for the eighth practice of training camp this morning. And there is still no Chris Jones. He's still holding out. I thought this deal would be done by now. I think Chris Jones has upped his price, and I think that's what's holding everything up. I think he's changed his mind, or the Chiefs underestimated how much he really wants. So now they're trying to find out a way to make it work. And if he wants $30 million a year, I just don't know if that's the move the Chiefs should make.
No,
if he wants 26, 27 in the middle between Aaron Donald and Quinnen Williams, like I said a few weeks ago, that makes sense.
Yeah.
But I understand what Chris Jones is doing. You want to max out this is your big contract. This is right here in the middle of your prime. You've won two Super Bowls. You got your rings. You want to be a Chief for the rest of your career, you say. You're 29. Like I said, you're still, you know, got some years in your tank. Coming off your best year. I have no problem with him holding out. I have no problem with him asking for as much money as he wants. The question is, do the Chiefs pay what they didn't pay Tyreek Hill?
that's exactly what I talked about last week when you were gone, is like, you know, the reports were that he wanted 30, and it's like, why are they going to pay Chris Jones 30 if they didn't pay Tyreek Hill 30? Like, I don't
know. The reason would be that he is the most important player on the defense, whereas Tyreek Hill was not the most important player on the offense.
Sure, and I understand that part, that he is the most important player on the defense, but he's playing a position that isn't getting 30 like a wide receiver would get 30, right? Like,
there's only one D-tackle getting 30, Aaron Donald.
Yeah, exactly,
Chris Jones is one of the top two D-tackles.
Absolutely, I would.
Okay.
Yeah, but I'm fully on the line of, if they didn't give Tyreek Hill 30, I don't want him giving Chris Jones 30. Like, I don't think they need to do it. Like, there's people out there that just don't think that the Chiefs can win if Chris Jones is not part of their team. And I think they can work something around and make this team be what it can be without Chris Jones if they have to. They can go find somebody. They can find people to fill in. They can do things that they need to do. You know, they're getting better at different spots defensively. Maybe you lean on that a little bit. I don't think they should give him 30. That's what I was saying last week.
No,
28, if I'd probably cap it at 28. I don't know what the numbers are going to look like for the cap. I don't do that, right? That's Brett Veach's job. But I don't know. I don't think it's the right move to be giving him that much money. Personally, that's the way I felt about it, and I think that the Chiefs can move forward without him if they need to, and if they have to make that decision, then I don't like it. I would love to have Chris Jones, and obviously he's a very key component of what they're doing on the defensive side of the ball, and maybe the biggest key, but I don't know. I don't want to give him that much money.
Well, some people listening to that would say, and I'm just playing devil's advocate, what's another couple million? Of course, that would have been the same thing with Tyreek Hill.
Yeah.
But the difference is, Chris Jones is the most important player on that defense. It's not even really that close. He is the most important player on that defense. It used to be him and Tyrann Mathieu. There's no Mathieu there anymore. So to me, it's clear that he's the most important player on the defense. On offense with Tyreek Hill, he was probably the third most important player on offense behind Mahomes and Kelce, and Hill went and got his money, and he already had a ring, and that's fine. And one of the other big differences, too, is you can find wide receivers. Finding a dominant defensive tackle, they don't grow on trees. So that's one of the reasons why you should, and I'm not saying they should, I'm just saying devil's advocate, that's why you should pay Chris Jones what he wants. If he's gonna hold out and miss games this year, that hurts your team's chances to win a Super Bowl. So he is one of the few terrific defensive tackles. He's not over the hill yet. So you could easily argue and say he is worth the $30 million compared to Tyreek Hill last year. There is a major difference between the situations. One, Tyreek Hill happened way earlier. This is right in training camp. So last year, you're able to get your draft picks. You could draft. You could sign. Here is a different situation. I still don't think there's any doubt in my mind. The Chiefs and Chris Jones are going to get something done, because I don't think the Chiefs would have waited this long and allowed it to happen and get to this point without getting something done. If they make a trade, if they decide, okay, we like Tyreek Hill, find your place and we're going to try to trade you, well, now you're going to have to get a couple of actual players, even if it's a cog to fill at the defensive tackle, to help you, lighten the load or spread the wealth in regards to the work, because Chris Jones is not there. One guy is not going to replace Chris Jones, just like one guy didn't replace Tyreek Hill. Last year, it took three guys to replace Tyreek Hill's production, and the Chiefs did it. It's going to be hard to do that with Chris Jones in the middle of that defensive line. And there's a little bit of flexibility. You can go D-end at times, too. So when you're looking at it from this perspective, Tyreek Hill was not one of the top two wide receivers before last year. Now, you could argue he was one of the top two receivers last year in Miami because he got thrown the ball a ton and got big numbers. But you could say, listen, we can replace Tyreek Hill, and they did, with Scantling and with Juju Smith-Schuster, Sky Moore, part of the draft. But Chris Jones, who are you going to get that's going to come in and help you fill that void? I don't see it.
It's not going to be an immediate thing for this season.
Right. And if it's not immediate and it's not ready to go this season, this is a team trying to go back-to-back. On the flip side, paying this much money to him at the age of 29, I didn't like the first deal he got. I thought the Chiefs should have walked from the first deal. Now, I feel a little differently now because Chris Jones actually has done things since that deal. The last year or two, he did fine in the Super Bowl against the Niners, and then last year in the postseason, finally got some sacks. So he's coming off a career year. And a lot of times you sit here and you say, what? Buy high, sell low, right? Yeah. Okay, so the Chiefs, right, and Chris Jones is like, I got to take advantage of this opportunity with this big deal. I get it. I'm all for him.
Yeah.
But the Chiefs don't have to do it. I think they would like to do it. But at some point, you got to draw the line and say, we think this is what you're worth. This is what we can do. If you want to be a Chief, you got to compromise. We might go a little bit higher. And people out there listening would say, $28 million or $30 million a year, what's $2 million a year for a billionaire owner? Well, it affects the cap, as we talked about. And there's a way to circumvent it in a way. So I think it can be done. I mean, there's guys making $30 million. Obviously, Mahomes makes more than that. And a lot of quarterbacks do. So it can be done. The Chiefs could make it work. They can make it work with Chris Jones. They could. They can make it work. The question is, would it impact them and hurt them in a negative way? Maybe not this year if they re-sign him to $30 million. I don't know what the whole deal would be. 4 years. You know, $120 million with an $80 million guarantee. I don't know what the numbers would be, but let's say that's what that was for easy sakes. Okay, he might play well this year, but what's he going to do when he's 31? What's he going to do in 2025? And those are the contracts, when they blow up in your face, you suddenly have some problems. Mm-hmm. And I don't want to, here's how I feel. I don't want to risk one of the prime years of Patrick Mahomes' career because of Chris Jones wanting too much money. And you could really look at this both ways. You could say, well, you're risking one of Mahomes' prime years of trying to win a Super Bowl if you don't re-sign Chris Jones. And you could argue you're risking it if you do. You really can. You could play both sides of the coin here.
You could say you're risking it this year on the front of it,
yes,
right, by not having Chris Jones on the team. But at the same time, yeah, I mean, I can obviously argue the other side of it, saying, okay, well, Chris Jones, you give him all this money and then he doesn't perform 2 years from now.
Right.
And that's where you've risked the backside of it, right?
Exactly.
So, yeah, there's a spot where you could risk in a lot of different ways one of these seasons. But
the other thing is they're trying to win back-to-back. And I think that might help Chris Jones in this situation. You know, if the Chiefs were coming off where they hadn't won the Super Bowl, but here they're trying to make history, you know? They're trying to be that, I think everybody knows without actually saying it, that in order to really truly be a dynasty, go back to back, and it's your second chance now at going back to back. And I think that might carry a little weight as to, I don't want to say it's panic, but you're like, I feel the pressure that we got to keep Chris to try to run it back. Whereas if you really are thinking about it long term, it's like, you know, there's a number we can't exceed, and if we do have to exceed that number, yeah, our chances of going back to back definitely are hit, but our chances of winning a couple more the next 4 years maybe amplify.
Yeah.
And that's the decisions they got to make. In Veach, I trust, right? In Veach, we trust.
Yeah.
He's made a lot of good moves so far. But Chris Jones versus Tyreek Hill is a much different situation based on the timing of where the season is, based on the positions they play. And that Tyreek Hill, honestly, was okay leaving the Chiefs. Chris Jones wants to be a Chief. He said it many times. He wants to be a Chief. And why wouldn't you? And so it is a whole different story based on the positions they play. And somebody texted me a week or two ago that said, like, you can replace a wide receiver. You can replace it. Honestly, you can even replace a tight end. Now, Kelsey's tough to replace. You can replace a safety in Tyrann Mathieu. But can you, because there are good safeties out there, you can replace running backs, as we obviously know. You can fill in and somehow work it out and put something together to fill in for a prominent tackle or guard or center. You can maybe find a way for a linebacker, if it's not an edge rusher. But trying to find a replacement for a guy that is one of a handful of great players at the D-tackle position who can, one, take on double teams and free up your linebackers, two, he can get to the quarterback, three, he can play D-in at times and D-tackle, so he has flexibility, and four, he's coming off a career year. Yeah, those guys, they're about as common as a $3 bill. Oh, yeah, there are no $3 bills. Sorry.
Yeah. Other than ones they distributed with Bill Clinton on them back in the late 90s.
Right,
or
exactly.
Or mid-90s, I guess.
It's just the point is he's a rare species is what Chris Jones is, and that helps him in this negotiation.
Yeah, it does. But here's another thing kind of that I talked about last week is, like, this is the other side of it. You're talking about what's $2 million to billionaire owner. It's like, you've told me for so long that you want to stay in Kansas City.
Right.
What's $2 million to stay in Kansas City and continue to win championships on the other side of that, right? Like, you're still going to get, if it's 28, you're still getting $4 million more than Quinnen Williams did on his deal.
Right.
You're still going to be under Aaron Donald, which I think is, I don't, I don't think anybody's going to pay him more than Aaron Donald. Like, not the Chiefs, not anybody's going to pay him more than Aaron Donald. So if you're looking at it from that aspect of it, it's also, and I know it's like, why are you just like worried about the Chris Jones taking the $2 million cut instead of the owners? Well, if this was baseball, I would completely agree with you, right? But there is still a salary cap. Yep. And so you still got to figure out how to work within those parameters. And so, yeah, I get it. You want 30, but what's $2 million a year to 28 if you want to stick around and win more championships? And that's what your goal has been, is to stay in Kansas City. I said that last week. I said, if he's serious about wanting to stay in Kansas City, then his asking price can't get so high that Kansas City has to make the big decision to not let him stay in Kansas City. Right?
Yeah.
Like, you got to meet common ground somewhere. And I'm like you. I was feeling pretty confident that something was going to get done before the season started anyway. I wasn't overly worried about it until there's reports out there that say he wants 30. And I'm like, I don't know if the Chiefs are going to do that.
Yeah.
So that's where it gets tough. And you know, you got to trust what Brett Veach is telling you and saying that he's had, you know, constant communication with Chris Jones and his people and all of that. And I still believe that. And not, to be honest with you, I still believe that Chris Jones is going to be playing for the Chiefs this year.
I do too.
I don't know if I'm going to like the deal that he gets, but I think he's still going to be with the Chiefs at some, maybe it's 29. I don't know. Maybe it is 30. I have no idea, but I'm maybe a little bit more worried about it than I was, let's say, 2 weeks ago. Because I really wasn't worried about it at all, the way Brett Veach was talking.
Yeah, I agree with you there. Well, we'll see how it all works out. I'm not going to be worried about it until the last preseason game is come and gone and he's not there. Then I'll be a little concerned. I'm not a lot
with a break camp. I would hope he's... They need him back when they break camp, come back to Kansas City for the last preseason game, I guess now. But that's where I would start maybe worrying a little bit, as if he's not. Yeah, last preseason game for sure I would be worried.
Well, we've seen guys many times over the years where they come in right after the last preseason game. And it's not that major of a deal. Now, the only problem is Chiefs start the season earlier. They start on a Thursday.
Yeah.
But there is now, what is it, almost like a 2 week thing between the last preseason game?
Yeah, because there's only three of them now, so there's a different kind of breakup there with how they do that. So
right. Well, as the world turns with Chris Jones. All right, I'm going to jump to boxing, and now I want to finish up with the realignment stuff. And I know we had a transmitter issue late last week, so Dusty wasn't able to talk about this, and I know he would have loved to, and we will today. Terrence Crawford, he's from Omaha, Nebraska. He put on just unbelievable performance on Saturday night. I actually thought Spence Jr. would win the fight. I thought it'd be a great fight. Terrence Crawford dominated, undefeated Errol Spence Jr., who's younger than Crawford. Crawford's 35 years old. He's 40-0, 31 knockouts now. He dominated. He beat Errol Spence Jr. on Saturday. First four-belt undisputed welterweight title fight. So he made some history there. First male boxer to capture the undisputed championship in two weight divisions since the four-belt era began in 1988. He doubled Spence in terms of landed punches. His percentages of punches landed, 50% overall shots, absurd 60% of power shots. I did not think a guy was going to dominate this fight. I thought it'd be an unbelievable fight, and Terrence Crawford did. And I saw Terrence Crawford fight a few years ago, and I was like, man, I didn't think he had as much power at the time. And I wasn't overly impressed, although I knew he was a good tactician. Man, he just absolutely destroyed Errol Spence Jr. So now you've got a star, no doubt, that people are going to know more about with Terrence Crawford out of Omaha, Nebraska, and we'll be interested to see who he fights next. All right. 13 years ago, Colorado got an invitation to leave behind the dramatic uncertainty of the Big 12 for what felt like an exciting up-and-coming Pac-12, a conference with huge plans, a big dreaming commissioner, Larry Scott. Last week, the school did the same thing in reverse, running from a Pac-12 that had lost two members, USC and UCLA, to the Big 10, hadn't yet been able to secure an elusive new media rights deal. Back to the Big 12, the Buffs will go next year in 2024. Let's talk about Colorado for a moment, then I want to jump into what the Big 12 may do next. And there sounds like there's something maybe imminent, but we shall see. I've said for months on this show that Colorado was coming to the Big 12. I'm not surprised. And I've got people that have texted me, seem surprised, or they don't think it's a big deal. And it is a big deal. It is a big deal. Is it Colorado or is it Texas and Oklahoma coming to your conference or leaving your conference? No, it's not that big a deal. Is it USC and UCLA coming to your conference? No, it's not that big a deal. But it is important. Somebody put it this way in an article I read this morning, that this doesn't, like, it isn't a game changer where all of a sudden you go, whoa, the Big 12 is unbelievable. It just slows down the process of the Big 12 being in trouble compared to the Pac-12. So it's like a win for the Big 12 and a loss for the Pac-12. And I will say this until the cows come home, and Brett Yarmark should send me some kind of royalties for how much I love that man. He has saved the Big 12. There should be a statue already molded and getting ready for Brett Yarmark. What he's done in his short span as commissioner is unbelievably impressive. This is a guy that is a forward thinker. This is a guy that is experienced. He knows marketing. He knows entertainment. He knows the industry. He knows sports, not just one sport. He knows them all. This guy has been somewhat brash, but not in a cocky way. Mm-hmm. He's just been blunt at times, which I appreciate. And he's called, and I, you know, the word I've used for 17 years on this show, or however long we've done the show, and I've talked about it using it towards Major League Baseball, is Major League Baseball, I always say, is reactive instead of proactive. And you have to be proactive if you want to get somewhere in the world. If you really want to, listen, to me, reactive people are followers. Proactive people are leaders. I believe that. Proactive people are leaders. Reactive people are followers. Because you're reacting to what somebody else did. You're not actually breaking the mold. You're not actually doing something. You're just copying somebody. You're reacting to somebody. And when you are proactive, and when you take charge, whether it's you take charge of your life, whether you take charge of the people you hang around with, whether you take charge of the food you eat, whether you take charge of the addictions you may have and you're going to, you know, squash those addictions, whether you're going to take charge of your life and you say, you know what, that's it. I'm in a bad relationship. I'm done with it. If I'm going to take charge of my life, I'm going to get custody of my kids because I should have custody of my kids. If you're going to take charge of your life and quit your job and take a leap of faith and you need a change in your life and work somewhere else, all of that stuff. All of that stuff. You are being proactive when you do those things. And Brett Yarmark, to me, has been proactive in about every single form possible. There's going to be basketball games in Mexico. That's not a reactive thing. That's proactive. Mm-hmm. Basketball clinics, the Big 12 out there at Rucker Park in New York, that is proactive. That's not reactive. No other conference is doing this. This is going and focusing on UConn, possibly add to the conference because of basketball. That is not reactive. That is proactive. Nobody else is looking at adding a basketball power without a football program that's worth much. He's thinking outside the box. And that's an unbelievable concept. A lot of people in this country just have no idea how to fathom that. Because we're so caught up in reacting and following and we just do what everybody else does. And that's okay if you're comfortable with that. But Steve Jobs with Apple wasn't reactive. Bill Gates at Microsoft was not reactive. Do you think they sat around and waited for things to happen? No, they made it happen. All right? Thomas Edison, you know, inventors, they made things happen. The Wright brothers, they didn't wait for a plane to be built by somebody else and then make it better. They said, you know what? We're just going to work and figure out how to fly. Worked out eventually. Mm-hmm. Those are the leaders, the people that are remembered in this world are usually people that are leaders. They are proactive. They are out and about and they get after stuff. And Brett Yarmark has done that. Did he lose Texas and Oklahoma? Yes. But that was not on his watch, really. You know, when you think about when he was hired and everything else, he was trying to salvage everything. So that was under Bob Bowlesby's watch. Since he's come in, he's stabilized his conference. He's brought in four decent schools. Houston, Cincinnati, and Central Florida, and who am I leaving out? BYU. Those four combined don't match what Oklahoma and Texas you lose in those, obviously. Bringing in Colorado doesn't. Those five don't compensate for Texas or Oklahoma. So I'm not sitting here going to tell you that Brett Yarmark is the greatest person in the world and he's got this best conference in America. He doesn't. But what he's done is he's salvaged it. He's made it the Pac-12, all these people on the West Coast said, oh, the Big 12 is going to fall apart. Pac-12 is going to raid them. Pac-12 had two opportunities to raid this conference, and they struck out both times. Mm-hmm. And you know why? Because their leadership sucked. And you know why the Big 12 was almost picked apart? Because their leadership sucked. Because guess what both of those leaders were? Reactive.
Mm-hmm.
The best thing the Big 12 has ever done in the history of the Big 12, in my humble opinion, is they hired a guy named Brett Yormark. And now, I told people on the show that Colorado was going to the Big 12 months ago. This, and people act like this is shocking new developments. This has been talked about openly by a lot of people. We're not surprised by various people we know that this was going to happen. It was just a matter of when. And when the Pac-12 kept kicking the can down the road and still can't tell you anything about a new media rights deal. And by the way, one of the best things that Brett Yarmark ever did was he immediately renegotiated the TV deal.
Mm-hmm.
That was the greatest thing he did. Because what he did was he made sure that every single member of the Big 12, including incoming members that they were going to add, they knew how much money they were going to get with a new deal. And it created, you know, you got a little more stability for a longer period of time to the next TV deal. So Brett Yormark sped up that process. And so then, you know what that does? That's called being proactive. It also allows all of your members to say, okay, we know where we stand. You know, if I want to join the Big 12, I know exactly how much money I'm going to get by joining the Big 12, right?
Yes.
Okay? And if I'm still a member of the Big 12 and I'm thinking about leaving, I at least know where I'm at. So now I can sit here and go, all right, if the ACC comes to me and says, we want you, I'll say, well, you got to beat this. I at least have a number. That's the way to handle business. The way to not handle business is the way the Pac-12's done it. They don't know a freaking number. They can't give you a number. Why in the hell would Colorado stay in the Pac-12 when they've given them so much time and they still can't figure out anything? You lost USC and UCLA. They bolted, kind of like Texas, Oklahoma. You didn't really see it coming. They went to the Big Ten, two of your probably your most noteworthy brands in your conference. And instead of immediately getting people to fill in that would maybe save yourself, you've done nothing. The Pac-12 has done nothing. They can't tell you anything about their new media rights deal because I don't think they have a freaking clue what it's really going to entail, because they're like, it's like musical chairs and they can't grab the chair at the end. They're the one left out. And a lot of people were saying that's what the Big 12 was going to be. Well, Brett Yormark came riding into the rescue. The Pac-12 doesn't have that hero. And Colorado said, you know what? We've given you time. We've talked with the Big 12. They knew that door was open with the Big 12. And Colorado, listen, in a perfect world, Colorado would have liked to have stayed in the Pac-12, I believe. Because, you know, it's easier to stay where you are, right? Although they'd already bolted for the Pac-12 from the Big 12. It made sense when they left. I get it. It makes sense for them to leave now. But they waited and they waited and they waited, and the Pac-12 could not come up with anything. Well, we're going to have something in April. We're going to have something in May. We're going to have something reviewed. And the reporters on this whole thing for the Pac-12, the people that are, you know, apparently in the back pocket of the Pac-12, people being paid to push out the BS that they were putting out there, were like, well, there's going to be an announcement at the Pac-12 Media Day. And then that went and passed. And that was the last straw for Colorado. It was like, okay, yeah, that's ridiculous. It's like, you know, for instance, Chris Jones. Let's go back to Chris Jones for a moment as an analogy. Chris Jones knows the market, right? The Chiefs know the market, and Chris Jones knows the market.
Yes.
And Chris Jones knows that Quinnen Williams is getting 24, 25, 26 million a year, whatever it is. And he knows that such and such getting 23 million a year. And he knows that Aaron Donald gets 31 million a year. So he knows where the numbers are. He knows what the market is, okay? So he knows that. And he knows what the Chiefs are willing to offer right now. I'm sure there's a number out there, okay? So now they got to get to a certain point. Now imagine Chris Jones trying to negotiate, but nobody's told him what anybody else makes. He has no idea.
Mm-hmm.
And he has no idea what the Chiefs are willing to offer. So now he's just got to pick out a number out of thin air, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Well, that's what Pac-12 members right now are sitting here going, how do I know to stay in this conference when I don't even know the number in the future? How do I know if I want to join the conference if I don't really know the number in the future? That's kind of important. Now, there are some schools supposedly applying for the opening of Colorado in the Pac-12, according to a report, which could be those same people feeding you BS, because anything would be better than where they are right now, possibly. I don't know exactly the schools that are doing that. And I get it. You're a smaller, you know, mid-major or something. You know, yeah, I'd go to the Pac-12, and if we could salvage that conference, that would be better. So Colorado's joining. The Big 12's preference for now is to add only one more school to get to 14. With Colorado's 13, once OU and Texas leave after the season. And that would be an even number. Even numbers are better than odd numbers. And there's still the possibility that the Big 12 could add three more schools, expanding to 16. That's still a possibility. So when we talked about this many months ago, we were talking about expansion. And once the Big 12 brought in those four schools that are joining the league this year and playing this season, and OU and Texas departing, we said, okay, they're four schools. And the ones we said right away were Utah, Colorado, Arizona, Arizona State. Those were the four that were immediately reported that. Those are the four that, you know, the Big 12 could go after and probably get if they really, really wanted to. And Dusty has talked about it. We've talked about it. That, and Brett Yormark's mentioned he wants a fourth time zone. And, you know, we were talking about how if you want the fourth time zone, you need to go San Diego State or something. Or other people said, well, San Diego State gave you the fourth time zone. And we were looking up the time zone situation with Arizona and whatever else. And I've mentioned this a few times, and I still don't think it's implausible. If you want the fourth time zone and you want to make a big splash and you want to really solidify some things for the Big 12, it ain't Arizona that you're looking for. It's Oregon.
Arizona's not in the fourth time zone.
I know. But all the reports are that Arizona is almost a done deal now. Mm-hmm. It's imminent. And listen, that's still, you still could go two more. You get Arizona, that's Colorado's 13, Arizona's 14. Okay, 15 could be, maybe it's Oregon, and you have to deal with Oregon State. You take both. Whatever. I'll take Oregon State if it means we get Oregon. I'll take it. I would. I don't want Arizona State myself. And it sounds like Arizona State wants to stay in the Pac-12. They're more status quo. They don't really feel comfortable going to another conference right now, whereas Arizona seems like we need to go to the Big 12. So that's not a tied at the hip situation according to various reports. So if Arizona does go and Arizona stays in the Pac-12, you're at 14. Listen, there's talk that the Big 12's discussed things with San Diego State, this and that, whatever. Add Oregon, add UConn. They're 16. They have been talking, or if Oregon is not on the map, which I don't have any concrete stuff to say Oregon is even that interested. Okay, I guarantee the Big 12 has talked to them. I guarantee you that. But if you really want to get to 16 and cover four time zones, if you can't get Oregon, which to me is the cream of the crop, what's left out there? Gonzaga basketball, UConn basketball, East Coast. Now think about this for a second. You see what Brett Yarmark is trying to do? It's obvious to me. A lot of people out there, I don't think it is. He's building a league that is the whole country. It ain't just the Midwest. It ain't just the Southeast Conference. It's the whole country. So, right, think about this for a second. If he gets Oregon or Gonzaga, that's a West Coast fourth time zone. You with me? You're Spokane, Washington, Eugene, Oregon. You get one of those two. Now, Gonzaga doesn't have a football program, so that's a little bit different. So be it. You get a 14 in football, 16 in basketball. Can you imagine a basketball conference if with Gonzaga, UConn, Arizona, Kansas? That's pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Right off the bat. And I'm leaving out some, you know, Texas, or not Texas, but there's other good schools. Obviously, K-State's up and coming. So, yeah, it could be a really good basketball league. There's no doubt about it. And Brett Yarmark is thinking outside the box from that standpoint that we could be the best. Everybody says the SEC is the best conference in American football. Why? We're considered the best conference in basketball. Well, let's go ahead and make it even better. Mm-hmm. But think about this for a second. With the teams, that the schools that the Big 12 has added, if you add either Gonzaga or Oregon on the West Coast for a fourth time zone, and you add UConn, all right? You have a presence in the Northwest. You have a presence near the West Coast with that as well, but it's Northwest, okay? You have a presence, Colorado, Arizona, in that region of the country, okay? You've got BYU. I forgot BYU. That's right. So you got a big presence there. You've got a presence, obviously, still in Texas with TCU, Baylor, Texas Tech. You're still okay there. You've got the Midwest. We know that. You got Cincinnati now. So now you're going up, in that area. And you go UConn. You got East Coast, Northeast, and you got Central Florida. And by the way, you added Houston, too, which is a pretty good one. Mm-hmm. You got Central Florida. You've got Florida. Think about this. You've got every corner of the country with exposure. That's the master plan. That's the master plan. That's why he wants a fourth time zone, so that he can have games in every single window, every single day on some, whether it's FS1, Fox Sports, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN The Ocho, I don't care, CBS, ABC, it don't matter. He wants to be on all the time. That's why he's talking about wanting to do Thursday and Friday night football games, your mark. Because he wants the Big 12 to be on every single day imaginable. He wants them to be on every time window, window frame, 11 a.m., 3:30 p.m., or 2:30, 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, Friday, Saturday, Thursday. He don't care. He wants that exposure. Why would he want to go to Mexico with Big 12 basketball? Exposure. Why would he want to have clinics at Rucker Park? Exposure. It's called marketing 101. It's called branding what you have. It's called spreading the word in regards to what you have to offer. If you are in UConn, now suddenly you have a bigger, and the media covers the Big 12 more, don't they?
Yeah.
UConn is in the back. I mean, hello, Bristol, Connecticut is ESPN, right? You get UConn, ESPN, whoa, that's interesting. You get Gonzaga, the West Coast, well, that's interesting. Wow. Now, what you could have is an 11 a.m. basketball game between K-State and Iowa State. At 1 o'clock, you could have Baylor, it's a really good basketball team, taking on BYU. And then at 5 o'clock, you could have Gonzaga versus Arizona. And at 7 o'clock, you could have Kansas taking on UConn. I mean, think of the possibilities basketball-wise. Football-wise, you know, you'd have to think about it a little bit. How would you break it down? But that's just an example of what the Big 12 could do if they could get a fourth time zone. And so I love the fact that you're considering outside the box with UConn basketball, who is the reigning national champion. You are thinking Gonzaga, they're really good, obviously, basketball. I don't know how much money to bring to the table. I have no idea on that one. But it's a fourth time zone. But I'm telling you right now, to me, the ultimate for the Big 12 would be, go ahead, Arizona's a nice number, nice one to add. Football's not great, basketball's very good, fine. Football still drives this thing, as we've talked about over and over. Colorado, Arizona, nice pickups. They're not the top flight prospects, right? But they're nice. So you got 14. You got two nice-looking cars to put in your garage, but you want a Ferrari. The Ferrari is Oregon. And if Brett Yarmark is as good as I think he is, I think there's a lot of stuff happening that people aren't aware of between the Big 12 talking to Oregon. I have nothing to base this off of other than just my gut and my feeling. And I'm not saying Oregon is going to join the Big 12, but I'm telling you right now, don't sit here and tell me they're not. Because there are a whole bunch of people who think they know everything. They're a lot closer to the situation than even us here. And they said nobody's leaving the Pac-12. Colorado's not leaving. And they were all dead wrong. And we said months ago in little old Glen Elder, Kansas, on the sports ticket, Colorado's going to the Big 12. So are here,
yeah.
They are there, and we know more of what's going on than they do, apparently. So, anyway, just want to put that food for thought out there.
Yeah, I've been saying this since the day that Brett Yormark made his first public statements at the Big 12 Media Days, that he said he wanted a fourth time zone.
Open for business.
And he said open for business, and then later on in that, you know, media right or the media meetings and stuff, he said, I want a fourth time zone. Oregon was a team I thought he was talking about the entire time.
I did. I thought
the
that's where it was.
Jay,
first
he
too.
Said it. Mm-hmm. I was like, Oregon's the fourth time zone. Because everybody's talking about Arizona and Arizona State. And I'm like, that's not a fourth time zone. They're in the mountain time zone. The fourth time zone is Oregon.
Yeah.
And right now, if I'm adding a fourth time zone and if I want to add a fourth time zone and I'm still focused on, I'm focusing more on completely adding a fourth time zone, not just one team.
Right.
So UConn, put whatever you can to the table. I get it. You got a basketball program that you can bring to this conference. Gonzaga, sure. I get it. You've got a basketball team that you can bring to this conference.
Yep.
But if I want the fourth time zone, for the reason that I'm getting a fourth time zone and for the reason that I'm getting TV deals, I want Oregon and Washington. I don't want Oregon and Gonzaga. I don't want Oregon and UConn. I want Oregon and Washington. I've got Seattle as another market, mm-hmm. and I've got Oregon as a football program that's had success. And the only other team that's made it to the playoffs from the Pac-12 is Washington.
Mm-hmm.
And so I want Oregon and Washington. If, if I'm adding two more teams and if I have the pick of who I can go strong after, those are the two I'm going after. And, you know, I want Utah, too, just to kind of get another, like, if I want to get to 16, right? Like, if I'm at, if I'm at 13.
Arizona's out, you're not doing Arizona?
Well, I mean, if Arizona, I mean, that's if Arizona 14. Comes in, then I'll go to 14 with Arizona, and then I'll focus on Oregon and Washington.
Okay.
But if Arizona somehow would waiver or something like that, I would probably take Utah just as much as Arizona, to be completely honest with you.
Would you take Oregon and Utah instead of Oregon and Washington?
I'd be focusing on Washington more than Utah.
Okay, all right.
Yeah, for the reasons that we're wanting TV money,
market share.
Like Seattle, I think is. I mean, you can take the entire Pacific Northwest right now if you get Oregon and Washington from why we're getting TV deals, right? And so that would be my focus if I'm serious about wanting that fourth time zone. But I mean, I don't think there's a cap number to an end here for the Big 12 either. Like maybe for the next 3-4 years there might be, but I don't see why you can't get all of these schools and make this a big conference and then split it up however you need to make your schedule work. That's going to be the biggest issue if you go past 16, say, would be getting scheduling to work. But I don't think it's out of the realm to say that there could end up being 20 schools in this conference.
And that was the talk years ago was there's going to be at the end of the day, there's going to be 4 20 team conferences or whatever it's going to be.
Because, I mean, these schools got it. These schools have to go somewhere.
Yeah,
and Oregon and Washington are not going to go to the Mountain West. And if the Big Ten doesn't want them, this is where you attack.
And that's the other thing when I've had people tell me, Oregon's not going to the Big 12. Well, you said Colorado wasn't going to the Big 12, and we told you you're wrong. And we've proven right. Well, Arizona's not going to the Big 12. There's reports it's imminent. Now, we'll see. They've been wrong before, those reports. But you got to sit here and say, put your shoes in, put yourself in the shoes of Oregon right now. Why are you going to stay in the Pac-12 when USC and UCLA are gone? Now Arizona, Colorado are gone. What's left of the conference? And you're the one that would maybe, you're the key to holding it together, but what do you gain by being with those other schools in a smaller, okay, we bring in San Diego State and we bring in, I don't know, who else would go into the Pac-12? Woo, that doesn't really move the needle for Oregon. And if the Big Ten doesn't want Oregon, or maybe Oregon isn't that interested in the Big Ten, I don't know. If that's kind of like the Big Ten's fine on sitting tight and doing nothing, and the Pac-12's dissolving, why wouldn't Oregon say, yeah, Big 12? I mean, it's almost like a process of elimination. Now, I will say this. The Big Ten, if they're smart and proactive, the Big Ten's smart and proactive, and you already have USC and UCLA. They should be making a hard push towards Oregon right now, too. And I would imagine they are.
My anticipation is that's what Oregon's waiting on.
I think so, too.
And I don't know if it's happened yet.
I don't.
And so I think there might be some more smoke to the Oregon to the Big 12 thing.
But if I'm the Big Ten, I got to be thinking a little bit about, okay, if I go get Oregon, now I've got a little bit better in regards to I got USC, UCLA over on the West Coast, you know, got Northwest with Oregon. And if the Big Ten stands pat and doesn't do, and they're pleased with what they got, that's where you just mentioned the Big 12 might be. That wouldn't it be ironic the Big 12 be the first conference to get to the 20 or the 18 that everybody's talking about for years? Everybody said the SEC be first and then the Big Ten. And the SEC and the Big 12 would swallow up the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the Big Ten, the ACC and the SEC. And by the way, when you mention the ACC, what's the ACC going to do? You know, there's some talks like West Virginia might go to the ACC. The ACC has no interest in West Virginia. They haven't. Why? If that was going to happen, that should have already happened. And why would West Virginia go to something that's really even more up in the air? Because Florida State is really upset with what's going on with that situation. You might be, this is the breaking point. We might be getting close to the breaking point of, okay, Arizona, Colorado go to the Big 12. Now they're back up to 14. They got a couple spots open, or so we think. Maybe it's 4 spots instead of 2 or 6 to get to 20, like you said. And then the SEC sitting at 16 with Texas, Oklahoma going, well, shoot, how do we turn down Florida State? That would be great to get Florida State. And then they grab Clemson. You grab Clemson, Florida State, SEC's up to 18, right? And then the Big Ten sitting there going, well, we'll go ahead and get, we better be the first on this punch and being proactive, as Wade's talked about. That's the key word here, boys and girls. Well, we better go ahead and get Oregon and Washington. We'll just go ahead and get both of them. So this is an arms race in a way. And the Big 12 might be the first to grab, you could say, the middle of the pack schools, but if they can somehow get Oregon, that to me is a game changer. That is a game changer that puts them, I think, above the ACC. And then all of a sudden the ACC could be they could be crumbling. And then at the end of the day, we have the three big power conferences with 20 schools. And it and everybody thought it was always going to be anybody but the Big 12 in those three, right? It was going to be Big 10, SEC, ACC, or Pac-12, but it's not going to be the Big 12. They were the fifth on the totem pole. Now they might end up being the third, and they might be the first to get to that number. Now, I don't know if Yarmark wants to go that quickly, that fast. That might be too much. At the same time, if you hesitate because you think it is too much, and then all of a sudden the Big 10 grabs this and grabs that, and SEC and the Big 10 are the first to get to that certain number, financially make it work. Now, what's left for you to grab? The remnants.
Yeah, that's a, you got to pounce right now. Like I'm not waiting for the SEC to decide if they want to add two more teams. Right,
and I'm not sitting there going, I have to stay at 14 if I add Colorado and Arizona. I don't think you should be saying that.
Yeah, because I think that's where everybody would think it has to start with the SEC. They got to make the first move. No, they don't.
No, they don't.
You can go get Oregon and Washington right now. You can go get Oregon and Washington, Utah, Arizona, Arizona State, Washington State, Oregon State, whoever you want.
Yeah.
If you feel like there's somebody you really want in this conference, go get them now.
Yeah.
Like they're and
get San Diego State. If you think San Diego State's better than Oregon State or Washington State, obviously. Yeah. Nobody thinks much of those two. As long as, I don't know, all the situations with the individual states as to, well, I'm sorry, we're going to interject our get our politicians involved. You can't, if you take one, you got to take the other. Well, Oklahoma State's not going to the SEC, okay?
Yeah.
But we've seen this where schools break up. It happens. So be it. That's business, apparently.
Yeah. I just to go real quick to that, but to come back to what I was talking about, Oregon State and Washington State are now the Kansas State and Iowa State that we were talking
yes,
about
you're right.
way back when. Right?
Where like, do they land?
Where do they go? Because they don't have something that stands out. With Kansas, we always said basketball stands out. Maybe somebody will take a flyer. The Big Ten, the ACC, somebody will probably take a flyer on KU. But where do K-State and Iowa State go? Mm-hmm. Washington State and Oregon State are those two teams in the Big Ten, or in the Pac-12 right now. If that conference breaks up and something doesn't happen.
Agreed.
They're probably going to be in the Mountain West, just like we thought. You know, maybe K-State and Iowa State might be in the Mountain West, right? But to come back to where I'm at, I remember when we were talking about this the whole time, and everybody started talking about we're going to have like four super conferences of 16 teams. I said right away, I was like, why does any conference need a cap at 16?
Right.
Like you can have one conference that has 16, one that has 18, one that has 20.
Yeah.
There's no reason because the math doesn't math, right? Like if you got all those schools and had four super conferences of 16, there's still going to be some of the Power Five that we call today, right? They're going to be left out.
There was a few.
And so it's like somebody might end up having more than 16. Somebody might have less than 16. Mm-hmm. Somebody might go up to 20. I remember saying that very shortly after all that happened. I'm like, why do they have to cap at 16?
Right. They don't.
They don't. There's no rule. This is the Wild West, right? There's no rules of how they have to cap what they're doing. They can do what they want if people want to come to their conference. And that's what's happening right now. And that's you got to pounce right now. If you're the Big 12 and Brett Yormark and you feel like SEC might make a move and get a Clemson and Florida State, and then the Big Ten thinks that they need an answer, go get Oregon and Washington right now, or whoever you feel those schools are that you think are going to add to your conference and continue to add to your conference. If it's Arizona added with Colorado and then going to get two more, I Gonzaga would be fun to be in this league in basketball, but they're at the bottom of my list of who I'm going after right now. If I can get schools like Oregon, Washington, and even UConn, who has a football program. They're not just going to get rid of their football program because they're in the Big 12, right? They still do have a football program.
Yeah.
And so when you bring that, you'll have a football program there. So I don't think you want to get UConn and Gonzaga to have an off number from a football standpoint. I think that there's an even number that I think almost everybody wants for football.
Well, you know, and once again, there's no rules. You talk about
there's no rules.
You could have an 18-team basketball conference and a 16-team football conference.
Yeah, exactly.
And you're not going to play everybody anyway.
Yeah.
So, you know, once you get past a certain number, you're not doing a round robin. That's the one thing I like about the Big 12 a little bit of football is a round robin. But you got to play a team a second time. TCU shouldn't have to play K-State a second time if they were in a bigger conference.
Yeah.
Maybe it would have. It just might have fallen that way based on the schedule. We see that sometimes with the SEC or other conferences. Sometimes there's a rematch because they happen to be playing each other in the cross-division scheduling. But let me go on here real quick. So Arizona remains a favorite to fill the 14th spot. Arizona State, Utah, and UConn considered other top Big 12 expansion candidates. UNLV, San Diego State, Memphis, Gonzaga not considered serious candidates at this point. The league prefers to add a current Power 5 school, but sees UConn as a top group of five option due to its stellar basketball program. Now, the key date remains July 1st of next year. So we're 11 months away. July 1st of 2024, when the current Pac-12 media rights deal with ESPN and Fox runs out. That expiration, only 11 months from now, has created significant uncertainty around the Pac-12 and is part of the reason Colorado bolted to the Big 12. The pressure remains on Pac-12 Commissioner George Klyukhov to land a substantial lucrative media rights deal as soon as possible. Arizona, Arizona State, Utah, and other Pac-12 members are waiting to see what will be delivered before deciding on their respective futures in the league. Furthermore, the Big 12 would need to welcome any additional members from other Power 5 conferences by July 1st of next year in order for those programs to fully access the new rights deal that your Mark negotiating got done that begins in 2025 and expires in 2031. So, does the Big 12 believe it has to be at an even number before the 2024 football season? You could do it with 13. It's not ideal if you just went Colorado and everybody else decided Arizona says, we want to wait this out until at the very last minute. You could do it with 13. It's possible. Once again, there's no rule that says it has to be a certain number.
Yeah.
A couple of industry sources have questioned how Colorado is able to obtain a full share of the Big 12 media rights revenue, $31.7 million beginning in 2025. ESPN and Fox have agreed to pay Colorado and reportedly any other Power 5 addition to the Big 12 equal value, which means an extra $190 million paid out per team over those 6 years. Now, I'm going to give you one little X factor that we have not mentioned. Deion Sanders. Deion Sanders. Mark Johnson, the voice of the Colorado Buffaloes, was in studio with us shortly after Deion was hired. He was here on a bird hunting trip with his good friend John Bowden, and he came in the studios, and he was talking about how immediately hotels were sold out as soon as Deion was hired. Season tickets went out through the roof, and Colorado's coming off a 1-11 season. Hadn't even really got any recruits signed. It was just that Deion is a name. He did a great job at Jackson State. And so it was like, wow, everybody's jumping, going crazy. All of a sudden, national media, including ESPN, talking about primetime, Neon Deion, the head coach of Colorado. Colorado's got more exposure in the last few months than they've had the last 5 years. Okay.
Probably since they were national champions in 1990 or whenever it was.
Right.
In the early 90s.
Exactly. So you don't think the Deion Sanders influence weighs some here? I think ESPN and Fox are like, wow, you know, Colorado is more attractive with Deion Sanders at the helm. And so this goes a little bit quicker than you'd think in regards to, yeah, we'll go ahead and we'll pay the extra money and go ahead and add Colorado. We're cool with that. Colorado gets their share. And ESPN and Fox say, yeah, we'll take care of $190 million paid out to that school over the next 6 years because Deion Sanders is there. And I don't think there's any doubt Deion Sanders might have even been part of his deal when he became the head coach of Colorado is, hey, man, we need to keep our eyes and our ears peeled to go to somewhere that we feel more comfortable, especially after USC, UCLA went to the Big Ten. And Texas, Colorado's usually recruited pretty decently in Texas over the years, especially when they were in the Big 12 or Big 8 days. This would help them recruiting-wise, they believe. So let's not underestimate the influence of Deion Sanders becoming the head coach of Colorado to speed up this process in a way to where they are now a member of the Big 12 in 2024. That is important. Mm-hmm. And what is that all about again? That's marketing, that's branding, that is selling your product. And part of your product now, with Colorado jumping on board with the Big 12, part of that product is Deion Sanders. That is a name everybody knows. And he hasn't even coached one game of Colorado. He might be a train wreck there, but it doesn't matter. And Colorado, right now, honestly, all the money they paid Deion Sanders to join and be their head coach, they've already made up because they're going to get a better deal.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I would be stunned if the Pac-12 got anything close to the deal the Big 12 got. When they've lost Colorado, they've lost USC and UCLA. Boy, we're going to really see how much weight Oregon has, right? The Pac-12 is in major, major, major trouble. And where those schools flee or go. Now, let's stop for a second. There were people saying this, and I even was one of them at one point, where it looked really, really bad for the Big 12. And we were talking about, you know, KU going to the Big East. We were talking about KU to the ACC. We were talking about K-State to the Mountain West, as you said earlier. We were saying, where's Iowa State going to go? I mean, it looked like doom and gloom, and everybody wrote off the Big 12. I will say this. Learn from history. Be slightly careful not the write-off to Pac-12 completely just yet. They can salvage
they
something.
They can do some
now,
things
can
like
they salvage
the Big 12
enough?
Did, but they can't do...
Can they salvage enough is my question.
Yeah.
And the key is you got to have the TV partners.
Yeah.
And right now, they apparently don't. Because if they did, they'd already have a deal done.
Oh, yeah.
Just like the Big 12 got. They got it done because they were proactive.
Yeah, you can do some things like the Big 12 did, but you can't hitch your wagon to Oregon thinking you're getting something huge,
yes,
right?
Right.
Oregon's got their own money.
Right.
Like,
oh, yeah.
Right?
Phil Knight.
Like, Phil Knight's got his money, and Nike is going to Oregon. Like, they've got it. They don't – that's not something that's going to bring in media rights, right? Oregon's got what they need, and they can figure out where they need to go after that, right? You can't hit your wagon to Oregon if you're trying to get a huge TV deal.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if you're trying to get something like the Big Ten or SEC, it's impossible. The Big 12 can't even get that with as sturdy and steady as they are now. So, yeah, but you can, if you're the Pac-12, you can make it work like the Big 12. You can go get Colorado State. You can go get Boise State. You know, you
maybe
can.
These
are just names I'm throwing out
right.
Like, they're similar to what a West Virginia, Cincinnati, UCF, obviously, those kind of schools, Houston's of the world, and then the BYU's that are out in the western half of the country. But you're not getting schools that are moving the needle to get you $40 million a year.
No,
right, and so. That's going to be the issue here with that part of it, is you're going to run out of schools to get exactly what you want, but you can still salvage it. And I don't doubt that. I think the Pac-12 is probably going to come out of this still as a conference, but it's going to look a lot different than what it ever has and what it ever should have been, probably, had they been a little bit more proactive and gotten things done. I mean, this is a conference that we were talking about the first time around when Beebe messed things up with Big 12, that Oklahoma and Texas were going to be a part of that conference.
That
right?
was all the talk. Like, the report said it was going to happen.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And so the Pac-12 was, at the time, the Pac-10 was sitting in a spot where they're going to get these schools, and then it didn't work. I don't know if they weren't proactive enough. I don't know what happened in the negotiations.
Some of the school presidents got some cold feet about it.
Yeah. And so,
major mistake.
And listen, one other thing I want to say about all this is, since I didn't get to talk about it last week, is like I'm in a K-State fan group on Facebook, and there's K-State's not the only fan base that's like this, by the way, but there's so many people out there that are saying, why are we letting Colorado back in and throwing them a bone and giving them a life raft here when their ship's sinking? And I'm like, this is not 2011. This is not when Colorado left. This is a new world in college sports. And if you don't think Colorado adds to K-State's experience and to K-State's money in this conference,
absolutely,
you're crazy, right?
Yeah.
Like, get over yourselves. Stop. There was like...
And the Deion factor as
Yeah,
well.
Like, I would say, like, there was like 20 comments initially off of that, and like 15 of them were the same thing that I was just talking about. Why are we letting them back in? They left. They shouldn't be back in. And it's like, you don't understand. You don't follow what's going on in college sports. You follow K-State.
Right.
And whether that's K-State, KU, whether that's Iowa State saying the same things, you know, everybody hates their fan base, whatever they say. They're the worst fans. If you go out to a game in Boulder, you're understanding. I'm like, I don't really care about any of that. I care about K-State and this conference actually being viable and being one of the top conferences in the country. And right now, they're tracking to be third behind SEC and Big Ten. And I'm perfectly fine with that. And so think forward. Stop living in the past.
Yes.
Think forward. Move forward with your life. Stop holding on to grudges. I've said so many times, if Brent Venables was the guy that K-State hired, I'd have been on board with it.
Yeah.
I'd have worked with it. I don't like Brent Venables. I don't like the way he left. I don't like a lot of the way that most of that staff did leave when Bob Stoops cherry-picked him off of Bill Snyder's staff when he went to Oklahoma. But I would move on.
Yeah.
I would move forward with where I'm at right now instead of living completely in the past. Now, listen. I'm a hypocrite if I say I don't live in the past in some stuff.
Sure.
Obviously, it's still fun when K-State beats Brent Venables, and I'm like, if we go out and never play in Oklahoma again and we beat Brent Venables and Norman, I feel good about that,
sure.
Right?
Right?
But you still hold on to some of that. But if it's something that's going to move you forward, and if it's something that's going to help you years and years and years down the line, you got to be for it, and you got to stop just focusing on one little thing all the time, because you're not going to move forward.
Well, and I'll take that one step further. So let's go ahead and look into the crystal ball. Let's say 10 years from now, Texas and Oklahoma are getting their heads beat in at the SEC, and they become like Nebraska, which I'm not saying that's going to happen, but let's say it did. And Texas and the Big 12 is one of the three remaining conferences. and they've got a pretty good revenue deal, but Oklahoma and Texas, all of a sudden, there's something that lures them to the Big 12 again. And you know what? In 10 years from now, you'll have people from KU and K-State, and, oh, my God, how could we possibly let OU and Texas back in? Dude, that would be one of the dumbest things you could ever do is say no to them.
Yeah.
Because if Texas, Oklahoma, 5 years, 10 years from now, said, hey, we want to come back to the Big 12 should say, where's a pen? Let's sign something. And every single president in the Big 12, I will be willing to bet you, would sign it. You know why? Because of the same reason why they were shocked and discouraged and distraught when they announced they're going to the SEC. Moolah. Okay, we're talking about Oregon as a brand. You obviously SEC's got the coup. They got Texas and Oklahoma. They got not one, but two. But let's just say 10 years from now, K-State fan going to be sitting there, or Iowa State fan, or KU fan. We can't let them in. They left, and the hell with them. No. That's not how the presidents look at this thing. They're like, oh, so we can all get $120 million a year instead of $80 million a year? Where do we sign up?
Yeah.
So stop it with this personal stuff. This is not personal. This is business. People got to understand. Fans do not understand business. They don't. Fans do not understand the business of college athletics. They have no clue. Most. Not all, but most. The people you're talking about have no freaking clue how sports works in regards to behind the scenes and the financial side of things. They have no idea.
Yeah.
They're just caught up in, well, Colorado left, so the hell with them. Well, you know what? Okay, K-State needs a life raft, and the Pac-12's got to vote on K-State joining the Pac-12 as the Big 12 would dissolve. Well, K-State fans said a lot of bad things about us, so we're just going to say no to K-State joining the Pac-12. Go to the Mountain West and have a good time. No, that's not how you make business decisions. If you make business decisions based on emotion, you're bound to make a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
And that's why fans are fans, short for fanatical. That's why fans should have no role whatsoever in what their team does and what decisions they make at all when it comes to hiring coaches, bringing in coaches, improving the facilities, recruits, or changing conferences. Just enjoy the ride that is musical chairs, because that's what this is kind of becoming. And you've got to understand the animal. And the animal revolves around the almighty dollar. And Colorado knew the number they're going to get from the Big 12. And the Pac-12, they have no clue. How in the world? Yeah, I'm surprised.
No clue.
I'm honestly very, very surprised. I am somewhat surprised that there aren't more schools that have already bolted from the Pac-12. I'm surprised how long they've waited.
Yeah, it's.
I actually was kind of surprised Colorado waited that long, too. But I am very, very stunned that there hasn't been a couple already.
Yeah. The Colorado thing was without a doubt in my mind for probably the last 6 months. When, not if.
Yeah, exactly.
And when Mark Johnson was here that day, it was even more.
Oh yeah.
When, not if.
Yeah.
And so, yeah. Right now, it does feel like that for a lot of Pac-12 schools. Is it's when, not if.
Exactly.
But, you know, like I said, we were saying that about the Big 12 for quite a while, that they're not going to survive two of these things, and they've come out on top of it, right?
Right.
And they're in position to be the third best conference in the country if things go the right way. Because ACC,
they've got their internal problems.
Their thing's going to run. Their deal is long.
They got the long one they're locked into, and it's the worst one. Yeah. Worst deals of the five, obviously.
Yeah, and so I think there's going to be some uproar within the members of the conference to say, "Hey, blow this thing up. Figure out how to."
There is get already.
Some, yeah, exactly.
Florida State's leaving.
Yeah, blow this thing up, or we're leaving too.
Mm-hmm.
I don't care what the exit fee is, because by the time we pay it, we're only going to lose a year, and we're just going to get all paid back by the time we go to a new conference that's got the deal and more money. So there's so many things that go into this, but
wouldn't that be the curveball of all these reports of all these teams? So you see Gonzaga's being mentioned, Memphis, San Diego State, UNLV, probably not, at least they're listed, right, in these stories. They're doubtful, but they're listed. Arizona State, Utah, UConn. Oregon's not mentioned. You know another one that's not even mentioned in here? And ties to what you just said, with some of the uproar within, internally in the ACC. Who's the most vocal school right now in the ACC complaining about things? Florida State. Who's to say that Brett Yormark isn't talking to Florida State right now?
I mean, who's to say he's not talking to Clemson?
Right. I mean, Brett Yormark should be having like 28 phones on speed dial talking to everybody. He should be thinking, he shouldn't think there's any limitation at all. I mean, it's like you said, it's open season. You know, we're open for business. If I'm Brett Yormark, I'm sitting here going, listen, if I could get Oregon, I can get Florida State, I can get UConn for basketball, and I add Arizona. Okay, right there, I'm at 14, 15, 16. I'm at 17. Okay, why not get an 18th? And who's the 18th? And by the way, I haven't even said Notre Dame. Notre Dame, and I'm not saying Big 12 is probably, I think Notre Dame is very highly doubtful of a Big 12. But the Big 10, it seems like, is waiting for Notre Dame before they ever make a move on Oregon. And I think you're going to be waiting a long time. And that might come back to bite the Big 10.
And that's another discussion.
Another animal.
Right? Like the Notre Dame animal is when NBC tells them we're not going to pay you anymore, then they'll have to join a conference. But until NBC keeps paying them, they're not going to join a conference.
Right.
They'll attach themselves to whatever hip they need to play basketball, right? But until NBC's like, no, we're not going to pay your football team anymore, there's no reason for them to join a conference.
Right. So I think sometimes we see these schools mentioned, and I think there's a few that are out there that aren't happy that people don't even talk about. And Florida State and Oregon got to be two that those are prominent brands that are still out there that I think are available for the taking if the numbers line up right.
Yeah.
So it's fascinating. Like I could talk conference alignment all day long. It's fascinating to me. I enjoy talking about it. I hate how it messes things up for fans, but I have to admit, after the Big 12 taking all the, you know, haymakers to the face and people stabbing them in the back over the years, and some of it well deserved because our leadership was horrible, it is really nice for once to be the one that is the aggressor, the one that is the predator instead of being preyed upon. And right now the Pac 12 is what the Big 12 was years ago when it was almost dead. Yeah. That's what the Pac 12 seems to be right now. And you know, it sucks for those schools and institutions. I feel for Washington State, Oregon State, and some of those, like, what the heck are we going to do? At the same time, it is a business, and it's a, you know, it's a dog eat world. And right now the Big 12 is winning that battle against the Pac-12. And remember, it was the Big 12 that talked about merging, and the Pac-12 said no.
Yeah.
The Pac-12's had like five chances
to salvage. When
Kliavkoff
comes in there are so many people trolling that comment he made last year when he's like, they said they're open for business. We haven't decided if we're going to go shopping there yet. Maybe you should have decided you were going shopping there, because some schools in your conference have decided to go shopping there.
Yeah. Isn't that crazy?
Yeah.
Oh, it's fascinating stuff. Have a great day.
State, regional, and national sports talk on your schedule. The Sports Ticket Podcast. Subscribe via Apple, Google, and TuneIn Podcasts or sunflowerstateradio.com.